Well, so let's pause there for a second, because I want to. There's a couple of questions that come up based on what you were just describing. One of the questions that's going to come up is, you know, the second question kind of nullifies it, but assuming the vaccine, the original vaccine, has efficacy for the original variant of the coronavirus. So assuming it had some efficacy, you know, in somebody's mind or model, the idea of the pressure that's being put on the virus that's causing it, you know, causing these other variants to emerge, would, I think they're trying to assert, well, that original vaccine is still effective against these variants. Is that false?
Yeah, if you actually look at the data, how these variants are associated with resistance to the vaccines. And they're showing, again, that the more these variations occur in the spike protein, the less they are responsive to the vaccines. And Pfizer has already said, look, we know this is going to happen. Their CEO said that this is okay because we've changed things at Pfizer so that within 91 days, if we have something that the vaccines aren't working for, we can make a new vaccine.
But wouldn't that have to go through a process of approval again if it's a new vaccine as compared to saying we're just going to keep giving it?
Well, under the current rules and the current mechanism, I would argue there wasn't much of a review by the FDA to begin with, so I don't know.
Well, even pretend, but I mean, even pretend, they can't just distribute it. I mean, yeah, they still have to submit.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that they've got everybody in this sense of fear mode so that they can pretty much well get done what they want to whenever they want to. And then for Moderna, I couldn't believe it when I heard the lady talk about this. The director of their vaccines for Moderna, actually, during the panel where they were talking about the boosters, actually said that T cells were not important for immunity.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so I thought, you're the director of vaccines for Moderna, and you don't think T cells are okay. So I don't know how you got that job.
You shouldn't have that job. But so let me. So is this a correct perspective? Basically, the vaccine program has created this sort of evolutionary pressure on the virus, which is causing all these other variants, and the other variants seem to be a whole lot more threatening than the original virus. And when they start to talk about a booster, they're literally doubling down on the thing that's creating the problem in the first place.
Exactly. And then there's all the questions about what's really in the drug vaccines that they have, because if you do the analysis of the actual vaccines themselves, it turns out that they are not identical to the genetic code for the spike protein of HU1. They're different.
Well, all right. So now the next question I have, it's something that is a point of controversy, at least at the time of this recording, is that there are people who are, you know, basically promulgating that, especially with some of the data coming out of Israel, that natural immunity is a whole lot more effective than the vaccine-induced, you know, so-called immunity. But there's other people who are trying to make arguments, and I think there's recently a paper out of Yale, you know, trying to assert, with no real data, though, but they're trying to assert that, no, the vaccine immunity is actually superior. So that's question one. Do you have a thought around that? And then question two, which would be the follow-up, is it possible that someone who has natural immunity then gets vaccinated, that it can compromise their natural immunity?
Yeah, so two good questions. So you'll find out that I don't give my opinion on very many things. I mean, if you want opinions, you've got friends and relatives to go talk to. Yeah, there's way too many people out there giving their opinions and confusing the heck out of people. So I tend to only respond with science and published data and what I know is going on. I would like to think that is a key critical difference between myself and many other individuals, including the fact that I won't go along the popular party lines of either side to make anybody comfortable. So the published data shows that, to begin with, take that last paper I talked about, it's the nuclear capsid that we do our best job of building immunity to. Right. And that's not in the drug vaccine. So by virtue of that fact, you can't even make the best defense humans have to SARS-CoV-2, number one. Number two, so the real benefit of natural immunity is that people are making both T-cell and antibody responses to all the parts of the virus, whether it be the spike protein or the envelope or the or the human gluten or the nuclear capsid. And the nuclear capsid, the data now shows, is what humans make our best immune response to. And that's not even in the vaccines for people to get the benefit of. So that's one clear benefit of natural immunity. And the other benefit is that if you look at the papers that have been published, and again, they're on my website on FlemingMethod.com, and you can go to the PDFs of presentations. There's five types of antibodies. There's IgD and IgE, which are not so applicable here. There's IgM, which is the acute phase. You know, it's a big one that you make up front. Then IgG is that longer lasting one. And then IgA. And IgA is critical because that's your lungs and your gastrointestinal tract, which is where this virus infects, right? So you don't hear anything about that from the drug vaccines. No discussion, no data. And yet we know from the natural immunity studies that IgG, IgM, and IgA are all produced in people who undergo natural immunity, person-to-person spread. So we know that that's there. We also, it's kind of silly to be looking for antibody levels in people because you don't make antibodies when you don't need them. You know, it's a waste of energy. It's a waste of resources. And if you made antibodies to everything you'd ever been exposed to, your blood would be so viscous, it wouldn't flow. It'd be thick. It'd be clotted. So you don't do that. You make memory cells. You make memory cells. And that's the function of drug vaccines anyways, to make memory cells so that when you get infected, notice, because vaccines don't keep you from getting infected or spreading it. What they do is they make get you to make memory cells so that when you get infected, you have a shorter period of time for your body to respond because you've already seen it. So we know from natural immunity that you've got these memory cells and you've got IgG, IgA, IgM. We also know that some people who've had influenza or cytomegalovirus have natural immunity to SARS-CoV-2 already. We know that, so that's the perks of natural immunity. We know from the drug vaccine biologics that when that's given, Pfizer, Moderna, or the others, that it interferes with the development of our immune response. So, for example, the innate level where interferon is made, which is, it means it interferes with the production of viruses, so it's called interferon. Pretty clever, right? Science. That's blunted with these drug vaccine biologics. T helper 2 cells, which are critical to because that's one of the latter parts of the innate immune system, and those cells have to attach to the B cells, the antibody making cells, and they do it with a 3-pronged mechanism. All three parts of those two cells have to match to say, yes, this is in fact the virus. Yes, this is the right antibody. Yes, make this antibody. Well, T helper 2 cells are suppressed. So, you know, it's kind of hard to make a real good argument for this is a good method. And so maybe it's not surprising that none of that data is in the emergency use authorization documents. They make clever little statements that say antibodies are made in such and such percentage, right? But there's no antibody data. There's no T cell data. I mean, they've got tons of tables in there about all these comorbidities, which as a research scientist, I look at and I go, yawn, okay, well, that could have all been in one table. How about the tables that really tell us that there's an immune response? Oh, we don't have those. Well, isn't that critical to a drug vaccine biologic, mm-hmm. that it makes an immune response? Because everything else is kind of, did somebody think you had COVID? Okay, well, great. So you had a positive PCR test, which is a good test when done properly, and a meaningless test when not done properly. It's like my patent. You know, if you do my patent wrong, if you don't take on carry out all the steps, it's not going to work. You have to do it right. Kerry Mullis said PCR testing 20 cycles gets you 1,044,555 replications. Okay, I shouldn't have that number down. That's how many times I've had this conversation with people. Okay. That's enough. After that, you're making artifact. You're making background noise. It's completely meaningless. And it just tells you there's a genetic sequence. It doesn't. That's why you have doctors. Doctors go to medical college. They learn how to take tests and symptoms. You get tests, you come in, you get seen, and then the doctor looks at you and said, well, with this test and these symptoms, that means you have this, right? But see, the test doesn't tell you that. And the symptoms don't tell you that. It's putting it all together that tells you that. So just because you've got that genetic sequence doesn't mean, it just means you've been exposed and you have that genetic sequence. That's it. End of discussion. Okay. And all the symptoms that they use on top of that could be for any viral infection, any bacterial infection, any fungal infection. It could be from cancer. So it's not really discriminatory the way they did it.
You brought up the PCR test and Kerry Mullins, who invented it. And were you surprised that the FDA basically said at the end of this year, you're starting next year, no more PCR testing, when that was what they were using as the criteria to shut down our lives, economy, and everything else?
Right, because they've come up with a different testing mechanism, haven't they?
Well, tell me about it. What have they come up with?
It's patented. I've got it. So there are three patents that you need to be aware of, okay? Three steps that you need to be aware of. One is a patented test for now diagnosing COVID-19. The next step is a patent that everybody gets wrong, where, you know, people are talking about nanotechnology in the vaccines. Let me tell you, there's no nanotechnology in the vaccines. Mm-hmm. There are no little creatures in the vaccines. I know that because we've been looking at that. Okay. We have looked at it. There's a lot of garbage out there, a lot of misinformation, all this graphene oxide nonsense. You just wipe it out of your brain. Vaccines have had graphene oxide for some time, and graphene oxide actually interferes with the virus being able to attach to your cells. Okay. I did better wet mounts in second grade than what I'm seeing these people do. Okay. Which is sad. It's kind of this squirrel phenomenon. There are so many people that are saying, look here, look here, look here. I mean, it's no wonder everybody is having a hard time wrapping their brain around this. I get it. I mean, I do fully understand it. The only difference is that I won't allow myself to get distracted. Mm-hmm. That's what 53 years of being a researcher will do for you. It's like, no, I'm not going to look at garbage. I'm going to stay focused on the issue. You can all go talk about stuff that doesn't matter. This is where the issue is. Stay focused. Then the other issue has to do with, so the second patent is really following people. You don't need anything inserted into people's bodies to follow them. Okay, you got a cell phone? Yeah, you're following. All right? Unless you're somebody like me who has a cell phone with a physics degree where I've change the inside of the cell phone so you can't track it. Seriously, you don't need to inject anything to track anybody when they're already doing it for you. Thank you. I mean, didn't the college students last year show us this when they went on spring break and everybody said, well, look, you know, there's tracing. And then they kind of had to fess up that they were actually tracking people. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't track us, but you kind of did, huh? And that was back last year. So that's the second patent, which is the sequence for knowing how to track people, right? And then the third one is the immune response that people are getting from these drug vaccines cannot exist if they're using the drug vaccines that are just the spike protein. To do that and to get the immune response that they are getting requires what's called self-amplifying mRNAs, which means they have to include the replicase or to replicate genetic sequence of the virus to do this. How do we know that? Because papers have been published on this. Mm-hmm. And we also know that there has been work on what's called transmissible and transferable vaccines. Mm-hmm. So transmissible is when you inject somebody and transferable is when you put a topical on it. Now, how do we know that there's any research on this? Well, amazingly enough, the bat is the animal that they did most of this research on. However, with SARS-CoV-2, the animal model isn't bat or mouse or dog or sheep. You want to guess what the animal model that they published the data on for SARS-CoV-2 is?
Can't venture a pangolin?
Human.
Human. They tested on humans.
Published.
Wow.
Okay. We're the animal model, okay? So you have a method for diagnosing it. You have a method for tracking people. And if you just vaccinated somebody, you know who they are. And people that aren't vaccinated will show up by their cell phones. Thank you for carrying them. Now, if you wanted to transfer that vaccine, all you would have to do is take somebody who's newly vaccinated and have them just kind of get next to the unvaccinated.
So basically, and that's shedding, I guess. So
shedding looks like it's the spike protein that's coming off in exosomes, which is, you know, again, there's a lot of confusion about exosomes. We've known about exosomes for 15, 20 years. They're nothing more than the release. I mean, look, cells communicate with each other by a variety of ways. They communicate with what's called cytokines. They communicate by interferons. This is not cytokine release syndrome or cytokine storm, by the way. If anybody's told you that, they have a misunderstanding. Just because some of the chemicals are the same that we can measure doesn't mean it's the same thing. So cytokine release syndrome is a name that Big Pharma gave to an adverse effect to drugs that it gave to people. Well, what were those drugs? They took the T cells out of people, okay, the innate immune system. They chimered them. They changed them, much like the virus, so that they would recognize a cancer. And then they injected that back into people. That's called CAR T cell, okay? And then that caused a reaction in the body because they shouldn't be that bad, right? Mm-hmm. So all these chemicals get released as the cells are communicating. Well, doctors didn't like that. It was bad. People were having bad outcomes. So what happens? If you don't have a name for it, people get nervous, right? So Big Pharma gave everybody a name. Cytokine release syndrome or cytokine storm. Oh, we have a name for it. Mrs. Jones, you're just having cytokine release syndrome. Here's some drugs for that. We'll give you steroids or whatever, right? So that is Big Pharma changing your cells and injecting them back into your body, right? Mm-hmm. The theory I put together in 1994 explains what happens when your body's functioning like it should, but it's being attacked by something outside. Too much cholesterol, too much fat, too much damage, too much virus or bacteria cause a reaction. That's called inflammatory thrombotic response because it's inflammation and blood clotting. And yes, it releases many of the same chemicals, but one is a natural occurring phenomenon to addressing an invader, and the other one is a cutesy name given by Big Pharma to justify it's okay, you're having problems with the drug we gave you. Just ignore the fact that we changed your cells and injected them back into your body, okay? So that's one of the things to explain off to people. And the fact that people aren't more tuned to that or have that down shows that they don't really have that fundamental knowledge they need to have. And that's kind of why when I address myself, sometimes I've started at my talk saying PhD, MD, JD. PhD figures out problems, MD treats problems, JD causes problems.